Welcome everybody to either have a seat or gather around. We've got, as we said in a press release this morning, nearly 200 years of experience gathered here up on the stage. And we're quite pleased to have a good wide geographical area, a good cross section of the sprint car industry represented. Our topic was introduced last year. It was pretty well received, and this year we've expanded. We're really excited. It's called Sprint Car Racing, the State of the Union. So basically what we're going to do first is just kind of do a brief introduction of ourselves, and so you know where the information is coming from. And then we're going to open the floor to questions, thoughts. I mean, this is your chance without a message board. You know, your anonymity here you're live and we get to see your face. But feel free to ask questions anytime throughout the program. Basically, I will moderate. My name is Larry Bose from Eldora Speedway, and I've been involved in promotions and stuff since 1978, and good cross-section of series, go-kart racing, sprint car racing, and so forth. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and start right here and have the folks introduce themselves, and then we'll go way into our rapid-fire questions.
My name's Bill Wright, Bill W. if you're on the internet, from right here at the Knoxville Raceway. I've been an official here for a while. I've done work for the Speedway for a lot of years here, and have been coming to this track since the late 70s.
Rex Lejeune from Attica Raceway Park in Ohio. Been obviously a fan all my life, and became an official back in probably like 1982, thanks to Larry. Been at Attica the last 6 years.
Hi, I'm Steve Beitler from out at Skagit Speedway in Burlington, Washington, and thank you to all you guys who come out to listen to Steel today. I've been around racing all my life. Built my first race car as a class project in high school, and was fortunate enough after a few years of racing to get to go out and travel the world of outlaws for many years, and actually lived here in Knoxville for about 3 years, and got to race here locally, and went home and built a little speed shop and built it up and sold it and bought Skagit Speedway 10 years ago and have been promoting that ever since then.
I'm Steve Sinclair, president of the IRA Sprint Series, that travels around the upper Midwest. Been doing so for the last 19 years. And I also work for K&K Insurance. As a matter of fact, I'm an insurance agent at Knoxville Raceway.
I'm Alan Holland. I operate Mosquito Sprint Car News. I've been doing that for since the late 90s. And before that, as I am now a sprint car fan, I'm just always a sprint car fan. I'm from Pennsylvania, kind of a Pennsylvania-Florida transplant plant now. I've spent a lot of time in Florida and Pennsylvania, so I get to see racing in both places. And I just love Knoxville and I love sprint car racing.
Hi, I'm Gina Lynch. I'm from Western Pennsylvania, but for years my sprint car involvement has taken me many different ways. In the winters, I do the Florida Winter Nationals at East Bay Raceway Park, and that's 35 years down there. And then I was honored to be part of the original group that was started Ohio Sprint Speed Week, which a lot of different organizations and states and everything have tried to copy that. So, you know, I guess that's the best form of flattery, but we were the ones that, thanks to Earl Baldus, that started Ohio Sprint Speed Week.
Okay, so you can see geography, experience. We think we have a well-versed, definitely well-versed, and without a doubt, well-qualified panel here. Everything from promoters to people that write about promoters and hear what people write about promoters and sprint car racing. So we're going to kind of just run down the line in no particular order. And we're just going to kind of give the observation of this panel what the state of sprint car racing is in the United States. And first thing everybody's always wanting to relate to is car counts. You know, one of the first questions I know working for Earl Baltus, it was always, he had two questions, well, three questions. What was the car count? How many people? Oh, who won? But he always worried about car counts, and people are number people. So let's just start right here with Bill, and let's just kind of talk about the car counts in your area or in your travels. Do you see the car counts on sprint cars up, down, stagnant?
Obviously, I'm here most Saturday nights. If I'm not out at a speed week somewhere else in the country. We have three divisions. We're averaging 80 sprint cars a night here at Knoxville. Our 410 class is up this year. I wrote down the numbers here. We're up five in our guys that qualify for points. You have to be here 75% of the time. That's probably the key number. We're up five there. We're up about three or four cars on a weekly basis in the 410s. The 360s are about the same as last year. We're up three in the point race there. So those, again, those are good numbers. And our 305s are up as well as far as the guys qualifying for points. So our car counts are really good. We've had 104 different 410 drivers in our weekly program. So Knoxville's kind of unique in that people will come in for a week or two during the year, just during regular Saturday night, usually to prep for this week. But we get to see a lot of different drivers from across the country because we're kind of located here in the middle. And we have a great purse. We have seen a bit of a dip in the 360s. Some of those guys are realizing that it's not any cheaper to get to the track, that it's not a whole lot cheaper to run the motors either. So we have had three or four of those guys move up this year to the 410 class where it's $600 to start the feature. And they'd have to finish third in the 360s to get 500. So they're starting to put together the numbers there. I'd like to also, if I could, since we don't have anybody from the area, talk about Illinois a little bit. I get to announce over there, there's a new 410 series called the Monster Energy Sprint Series. They've been packing the house over there with fans. It's a great new series. They're drawing 25 to 30. We've had up to 40 cars, 410s. At those shows, so I'd like to bring that up as well, that there are more 410s in the Illinois area than there are 360s, and I also do work for the Sprint Invaders, which is a 360 series, and their counts are down while the 410 counts are up over there. So I see sort of a trend where guys are switching to the bigger motors, and part of that, I believe, is the move to 430s. Here at Knoxville, we've seen a few of those this year. So again, that's keeping people with the old Dash 12 motors in the game here, around here, so.
Rex? Well, we raced two classes of sprint cars, the 305 sprints and the 410 sprints, and last year we averaged 33 410 sprints on a weekly show, and this year it's 34. The main reason is we had a great turnout for our World of Outlaws show in May. We had 57 sprint cars, so that kind of helped that, that average a little bit. And like I say, the thing that kind of keeps our car counts going is we have a great group of fans that put together a mini series called FAST, Fremont Attica Sprint Title, and it's a combination point fun between the two tracks that are 30 miles apart. And that, on some nights when drivers might have a tendency to take a night off for whatever reason, that extra bonus keeps them going. It's a $10,000 to win point fun at the end of the year, along with our other two track point funds. So that keeps the 410s going throughout the year. And our 305 class is a really good class that produces 410 drivers. We average about 25 of them on a weekly basis. And this year, I think we have 93 different 410 cars that we've had throughout the season. I think our number's at 94.
Good. All right, Steve.
We run three different sprint classes on a weekly basis, Sportsman, 360, and 410. Our Sportsman sprints are basically the same as the 360 or 410, except flat top piston, cast iron heads, real limited injector, stock crankshafts, things like that. So it's a relatively inexpensive motor. About 4 years ago, our Sportsman class had died off down about 12 or 13 cars, and I actually thought we were going to get rid of it. All of a sudden, it started coming back, and we probably got around 20, 22 cars in that class a night. We used to average around 55 to as high as mid-70s on all three sprint classes. And right now, we're running down around 45 to 55 cars a night. Our 360s, our 360 and 410s both took the biggest hit last year. Our car counts went from, 17 to 21 cars a night, clear down to 12 to 15 a night. It got me pretty concerned. But this year they're actually come back a little bit. We're picked up a couple, three more cars in each division. And our 410 class actually come back a little bit better this year than I thought it was gonna. Some of what we're seeing, about 7-8 years ago, I've had the track for 10 years, about 7 or 8 years ago, we started kind of a farm league deal. We've got a little quarter midget track right at the Skagit Speedway where they started. We got a bunch of kids in that. We probably got 50 kids in that now. We started with half a dozen the first year. They get done racing there around age 10 or 11. They move up the road about 20 miles to Deming Speedway where they run four classes of mini sprints. So now we're starting to get a bunch of feedback every year. We get three or four new drivers from that. So our mini sprint, our quarter midgets is growing. The mini sprint's starting to grow up there, and now we're getting feeder cars and drivers coming back to our track. So I think overall we're going to see it gradually increase a little bit as the years go by again.
My IRA series is a blue-collar regional traveling series throughout the Upper Midwest, and we've always had one of the best car counts in the country. And our overall car count is down, but our core is the same. We still have 20, 22 guys I can count on every night, no matter how far we're going, wherever we're going. When we go to an area, however, that doesn't have any cars in that region, I'm not getting the extra cars. The field fillers aren't coming anymore. So my overall car count is down, but my core is the same. I do see, especially being a blue collar series, when we go to a half mile, I only get my core guys. I'm not getting the Wilmot type guys that are local. They will not come to the half mile if they don't feel competitive. And early in the season, when the gas price, in our region, gas prices are as high as any place in the country. And I'll give you an example. We raced at Wilmot on a Saturday. We had 32 cars. We were at 141 Speedway on a Sunday, Memorial weekend, with a bad weather forecast, small track, two-hour drive. I was 7 down. So unless the guys are chasing points on certain weekends, they're not willing to spend that money for the gas. So the economy's definitely affected them.
Well, Alan, you travel a lot of places, so kind of talk about the car counts and then quantify the area that maybe you were in when you talked about the car counts.
Just from even seeing just race results that I get in, it seems to me that the 360s are down this year, way over from what they used to be. I don't know why that is. If teams are moving up, like Bill was saying, moving up, you know, often used up the 410 and stuff. But 410 seem to be holding their own in the pockets of the country where they're at. But the 360s that were one time where had maybe 40, 50 cars in a field are down to 30, some are down to even the 20s only. And there's some places you see regional races where they're not even making 20 cars at the moment. And I don't know why the 360s are doing that, if it's just people can't afford to run them any longer. I don't imagine all that many people moved up to the 410s because there would have been a rather large influx of cars then. But in Pennsylvania, our 410 racing is really doing fine. There's Williamsville Friday night, probably averages in the low 30s, sometimes higher, sometimes a little lower, depending on what's going on and who's traveling, who isn't. On Saturday nights, we have two tracks running, Port Royal and Lincoln, and they both probably pull around 30 cars each, high 20s, low 30s, somewhere around there. So on a Saturday night, there could be 60 cars running in Pennsylvania between two different tracks. We have 358s in Pennsylvania, which don't have anywhere else in the country. And they probably drop back a little bit, but not all that much, because they can also be running on two nights, like Trailway on a Friday, and Williamsville on a Friday. There could be 30 cars or more at each of those tracks. So the 358s are fine. The 360s, even in Pennsylvania, are slowing back a little bit. I noticed URC, their car count has gone down a little bit. And up in New York State, there's the Patriots and the ESS, and they kind of, it's tough. Sometimes we have racing skills against each other, so they might not have as many cars as usual. But in Florida, where the racing has really dropped off drastically in the last few years, they're trying to bring that back too, with Ocala booking 5 or 6 Top Gun Sprint shows, which is a Florida-only type series. And Ken Sands took over Volusia Speedway Park, and he's running it on a weekly basis all the way into, I believe, December. And he's booking sprint car shows, which is the same deal. They're type Top Gun type cars. Probably every 3-4 weeks there's a sprint car show. So between the traveling Top Gun series and what East Bay runs and what Volusia and Ocala are doing, there's quite a few shows there too. And then the pavement series down there, which died earlier this year, the TBRA and some of the other pavement series down there, promoters got together and decided they didn't want to pay for sanction fees and stuff. They just wanted to pay their own purse, and it wasn't quite enough. So there wasn't going to be any pavement racing, sprint car racing in Florida. And now it seems like the TBRA, DeSoto came back, and TBRA has one race a month booked all the way into, I believe, December also. So the pavement racing is coming back a little bit, but that's probably going to take a little while until they can get the promoters and the sanctioning bodies down there to work things out.
At East Bay, that's kind of a unique deal, because we usually started earlier than any other track, so people are looking to us to see what our car counts are and everything. For the first time in the 35 years at East Bay, we did not run 410 sprints. Last year, the owners leased the track for the 410 shows, and they were willing to lease it, the track again for the 410 shows, but they were not willing to put on the show themselves. So the 360 show that we started 13 years ago, we started that, and that's holding its own. We don't have the high car counts like 50 cars, but we had 41, 42, 43 cars in that, and the quality was certainly there. Over the years of the 360s, we call that race the King of the 360s. Gary Wright was the very first winner in 99, the first year that we ran it. And believe it or not, we never had a repeat winner except Gary Wright, you know, in the years following that. So we have, you know, the competition is always good and close, and the racing was excellent this year. We had three different winners in three nights.
And what about up in like the Western Pennsylvania area where it seems to be
yes.
continual struggle of tracks fighting each other?
Yes, we started off on kind of a rocky road in Western Pennsylvania because the drivers and owners basically wanted more money to run. The tracks there are kind of like in between. If you can go east for 2 or 3 hours up to the Grove area and so on, then the purses are higher. If you go west toward Attica and Fremont, which that would be a 2.5 or 3 hour drive, the purses are higher there. And basically there was just not enough money, you know, to support a team. And so now we've gone to, first they tried cutting the basic car count for a feature, and only started 20 cars instead of 24. And then they increased the laps by five, so we're up to 25 lap features. However, the teams that can afford to travel a little bit are not there on a regular basis, and they had more teams, you know, following other circuits and kind of picking and choosing where they wanted to run. As far as a weekly car count at Lernerville, it's kind of hanging in around between 20 and 25. But the quality is not there as it was before.
All right, so I think the overall consensus, what we're hearing, is that the car counts are still healthy despite the economy, and kind of alarming, though, on the 360 numbers. I know, like at Eldora, we do all sanctioned shows, and our Kings Royal with 410s was up. All of our sanctioned shows have been up, but our 360s are down. Like this last week we ran one and we were down like 18 cars from the same race a year ago. So kind of alarming and some concern, but I think Bill hit it on the head when the magic maybe isn't there, or the cost factor isn't what everybody thought it was. Okay, so we heard the car counts are good and healthy. Now let's kind of talk about the drivers, the driver demographics. The numbers are holding their own and going up. By driver demographics, you look at USAC, where you've got drivers that aren't even shaving yet and the fans are 80 years old, and then you get the World of Outlaws, where the drivers are approaching AARP and every young kid is there. What do you see in driver demographics? We'll start with Gene. We'll go backwards this time.
Okay. At East Bay, of course, those are the traveling fans that I see down there, and the I would say it takes a more season. We get a few of the beginners in the ranks, you know, enrollment of the racers, but it's kind of like the same or the familiar names that come down and spend the money, because everybody knows that, you know, the travel is, you know, if the gas prices were to fall, maybe we would see a difference. But you have to be kind of sure that, you know, you're going with a proven factor and with a driver and a car and an owner. Otherwise, you know, you could end up in the hole pretty badly. And the other thing that affects us so much is the weather at East Bay. You know, if we have a freezing cold winter like we did a year ago, not this past January and February, but the year before that. Oh my, the vendors hurt, the owners hurt, the track owners hurt, the racers, all the teams were hurting, because if it was either freezing cold and the people wouldn't turn out, or if they did turn out, they were all bundled up in the grandstand and they weren't walking around spending their money. And the other thing was that if it warmed up a little bit, it rained. So that affected everybody too. So they lost shows. And nobody looks forward to making the trip to Florida and then lose the shows that we were scheduled, we thought we were going to get in.
Alan, what are you seeing on drivers?
Well, in Pennsylvania, we have a series, point series that totals all of racing in Pennsylvania throughout the year, and there were 110 races scheduled, and out of those races, we're probably a little over halfway through, maybe somewhere around halfway through, maybe close to three quarters, and there have been 25 different winners so far in Pennsylvania. There hasn't been one predominant winner, and a lot of them have been first-time, young kids, first-time winners that have never won a sprint car race before. And it always amazes me in Pennsylvania how that happens, as there's always an influx of drivers, there's always an influx of car owners in Pennsylvania. A couple of years ago, we lost like three car owners that quit, Bob Stewart and Walt Dyer, and then when Bob Weikert got out, and just everybody's thinking, oh, what's gonna happen? There's always these other new car owners in Pennsylvania just keep coming in. I don't know if it's because of the region, it's been like that. The sprint car racing has been big in that area for so long, and it's in everybody's blood or what it is, but the car owners always come back, and there's always young drivers, and it's always the young drivers that are always keep seeming to make it tougher on the older drivers to get back to victory lane.
Do you think some of that is the heritage, like you talked about, the heritage in the area? It's like over in Indiana, non-wing sprint car racing is huge over there, and you've got these tracks, they don't pay huge money, but most of the tracks pay like $1,200 to win and things like that. And their car counts are down a little bit, Gas City and places like that. And then you've got Paragon Speedway, pays $500 to win, and they're averaging 40-some cars a night. And it's like in that area, when you graduate, you get a sprint car.
So I think it's definitely in their heritage, because when you compare Pennsylvania, where you can be in one area, you can run on so many different tracks within maybe an hour. And Indiana's the same way, just that's non-wing and Pennsylvania's wing, you know? And it's just, people have been doing it for years, generations and generations. And even the car owners, some of them, Pennsylvania car owners, their fathers were car owners, you know? And it just continues on to new life, and it just keeps going that way. Pennsylvania's been lucky that way. I hope it stays that way, I don't know if it will, but they've just been lucky that way.
Steve, you said you have a core of drivers. Now, do you see that core, the same core, or do you see new faces coming into that core?
Unfortunately, it's predominantly the same core. However, it's the same family core. I've got a third generation racer, and I've got several second generation racers. Age-wise, it's kind of across the board. My top guys, though, are the same. Three top guys battling for the points in the last several years. I wish that were a little different, but it's not. In our neck of the woods, I think a lot of the perception that the 410 costs more is a negative, and it's a perception. I truly believe it's a perception. The younger guys are starting out in the 360s, and the 360s by us are not an ASCS 360. It's more like a glorified 305. You got the steel heads and such. But I think the perception to get into that and to be competitive is a lot cheaper than to try and be competitive with me. So if the new guys coming up are starting with that, and, you know, you were talking about car counts before, you don't see the 50 cars at this or that. I believe that the cars are going to where they believe they're going to make the show. You know, years ago we used to travel out to Attica, and I think one night was at an All-Star IRA show. We had 72 cars on Janet Holbrook's first night of promotion. That means there was 40-some cars not making any money. You know what I mean? So I think teams are looking where they're going to race, and I think I'll get more 360 guys when they see some holes open up at the front where they think they can maybe come and run in the top 10. But they're not going to start out with me and not make the show. They're not going to travel 5 hours to not make the show, where they can travel 1 hour and maybe not make any money, but they're making the show. And I think that's the deal.
Steve, you hit on it earlier, I think, you know, your farm system.
Yeah, we've got, you know, we're like a lot of tracks. We've still got a few of the old salt dogs there that have been there. I got two drivers that have been there for over 30 years, and I got a couple more drivers that are, you know, 20 to 23, 4, 5 years, something like that. But we really have a lot more younger drivers. And, You know, I was sitting here thinking about the question that I think a lot of our 25 to 35 year old drivers that we don't have as much as we used to is because at that time in your life, you're starting families and you're buying homes and you've got a lot of other expenses. Once you get past that, you've got a little more expendable money, so that's why some of the old dogs are still there. But with our younger group, most of them, their fathers or their uncles or somebody used to race, and they want to stay in racing, so they're grabbing the young kid now. So there's no way a 16 or 18 year old kid can afford a sprint car. So they're bringing them kids along and they watch them at the mini sprint track. So I really push hard to get young drivers at my racetrack. I want high school kids in race cars, because when they go to school, they're telling all their buddies, hey, I'm racing this weekend at Skagit Speedway. So when these high school kids go up there, they know somebody. It's like going to a football game out of town. You sit down. If you don't know anybody in the game's a game, but it's not exciting because you don't know anybody. If you go to a racetrack somewhere and you've met two or three of the drivers, it gives you something to focus on. It's a lot better fan interaction and involvement with it. So we got a lot of young drivers. We let them race clear down to 14 if they've got prior experience. I haven't had any of them want to come right into the 410 class at age 14, which I would discourage that. I probably wouldn't let them. But if they're 360 or sportsmen or our Hornet class, they can do that. But all we do is we tell them, give us a resume, show us where you've raced, and we'll watch. As long as you're safe, we'll work with you and let you race. But you got to get them as early as you can nowadays, because skiing, boating, golfing, something else is going to get them if we don't get them, and we need those people carrying our sport on.
In our 305 class, we have a lot of them from, I'd say, from 14 to 18, 19, including Paige Poliak, a young lady still in high school who's doing really good this year. And I'd say a lot of the 20-year-olds, mid-20s, are going up to the 410s. We have lost a few. We've lost like a Mark Keegan, who, you know, this was the 29th annual year of Speed Week, and this was the first Speed Week that he wasn't at. And, you know, we're starting to lose that, but I see a lot of, I wouldn't want to say, we're getting into some third-generation drivers where the grandpa is bringing the grandson, and, you know, the son might not have raised, you know, that much, where he's carrying his out through his grandson, and we have quite a few of them that are coming on now, too.
Since Beitler left our program, our demographics got a lot younger. Just thought I'd say that. Obviously, we have a really good mix. If you follow Knoxville Weekly, we have third generation McCarls, second generation Swindell running with us this year, Wolfgang, second generation Wolfgang. So we have a lot of young drivers in that respect. I forgot to mention English Creek Speedway, our outlaw kart track down the street, but we're starting to get some of those in the 305s. 360s as well. We have a good mix, and a shameless plug tomorrow at 1, you can meet a lot of those young Swindells, and we even have a second generation Delansky now, so you can come out and meet them tomorrow right here. So we do have a good mix. As far as the fans, I think that was part of the thing. I think all of us need to do a better job of promotion to the young people, but like the McCarl group, like Steve was saying, they probably bring 200-300 high school kids every week, so that's going to help you a ton. I mean, they have a bunch of friends at school. They say, oh, you won last week, Carson in the 305s or Austin in the 410s, and they're coming out, and that's what we need. That's what gives you the influx of the new fan.
I think Steve Beitler hit on something very, very important, and that was getting to know somebody that's racing there. And I like the idea of getting the kids and stuff. I mean, case in point, I brought a couple kids out with us to the races, and we went to Oskaloosa Monday and Tuesday. They're World of Outlaw fans, so they knew the drivers, and, you know, it was a good race, but they were just going crazy in the grandstands. We go last night, and the one boy didn't know any of the drivers, and I said, man, you know, I thought it was great racing in the heats. The interview with Robert Ballou was probably even more exciting. But anyways, it was great racing. And then I looked at what you think. Yeah, it was good racing. But he didn't know anybody. So it's so important, I think, promoters are really knowing now that you can't just be a race organizer. You got to be a promoter, and you got to build up the Tim Tebow's, like in football and stuff like that. You got to build up names. Let's kind of, okay, we talked about car count and the drivers. For the fans, let's grade or talk about the competition. I see more and more tracks. I mean, back in our day, Gene and mine and even Rex, when we started, I mean, you qualified and the fast guy went to the rear, you won a feature, the next week you started last. You know, now they got up to 12 inverted and some are straight up. The competition, what's your perception of the competition versus the admission money for the fans?
I'll start with it. I think track conditions have a ton to do with it. I mean, if you got 2-3 lanes, here at Knoxville, we had a bad track the opening night, and we've had great ones since, and that's the norm here. And hopefully will be the rest of the week, or else I'll eat my words. But we've had great. I mean, Lasoski, leading feature winner ever here. He's got a couple of feature wins. Dusty Zomer, so the cream is rising to the top. The thing I've seen, like Alan was talking about a lot in the other states, is I'll see a winner and I'll think to myself, how in the world did they win? You know, like if it's at Williams Grove or Lincoln or somewhere, and someone will say, well, the track was one lane or whatever like that. And I think track conditions have a lot to do with that. Obviously, the cars are a lot more even now. But here in Knoxville, we see usually the cream rising to the top. You see the guys with experience up front. You'll see that again this week as well. So I think track conditions are another part of that.
I go along with the track conditions. You know, I can't brag enough about our staff that does our track conditions. It's 2 and 3 lanes every week, smooth. And for weekly racing, I believe that our racing's good with multiple winners because we don't qualify. You know, we save a little bit on the track, and if you qualify, then how do you penalize the guy for qualifying fast? You got to invert him. So you're penalizing the guy for going fast, and then you got to reward him at the end if they qualify good by starting them up front. So your fast guys are going to start up front. There's not going to be much passes, but with a pill draw and a redraw, a fast guy 1 week might be lucky and draw a pole position, but then he might draw 12 too. So it just kind of mixes it up, and you don't know where the guys are starting. And you know, if you come to a race, you don't start up front every week. You got to, you know, sit up in the seat and race. And we believe, you know, we have great heat races along, you know, going right into the feature. And I think a lot of that is because of they don't know where they're going to start every week.
Okay. So we got 2 pluses on competition. Okay.
You know, I agree with these guys that, you know, a good dancer can't dance on a bad dance floor, and it's up to the promoters to give them. These guys are professionals. You pay a lot of money to come watch them. It's our responsibility to give you the opportunity to see them perform to best their capacity. And you know, I've had some pretty lousy racetracks at Skagit Speedway. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else because I have definitely figured out what I don't want to do. But you give them a good racetrack, and the fans go away talking about the race forever. If you give them a bad racetrack, you get killed on the message boards the next week. But the competition, what's different now than back when you're talking about fully inverted fields and stuff, the personal innovation has gone away from racing. Nowadays, you throw the plastic down, you buy the same thing that everybody in the country's got. The old days were, you know, Kenny Weld would make a change on his car, and his car worked better than everybody else's, and he could start at the back and pass them. Well, everybody's caught up on everybody else's technology. Carl Kinzer would come out and dominate. Pretty soon people would catch up. Carl would go home for a couple weeks. You wouldn't see him. All of a sudden he'd come back out with some new motors and stuff. And another week later he's done beating the competition again. That's all going away because everybody's getting so close in competition. Now it's getting down to where the mechanics play a lot bigger part, a bigger role in it. Shock technology has been the biggest change in sprint car racing in the last 5 or 6 years. The tire technology with Goodyear coming back in has been a good deal. And Hoosiers, my friend, don't get that wrong. The problem with Hoosiers, they built too good of a race car tire. They did their job too good. They got the cars so locked down that really they're running wide open. Goodyear loosened the tires back up, which made the racing better because now you just can't throw a brick on it and steer the thing around the racetrack. So that's helped racing a little bit. But the competition side of it is, you know, the entertainment's going to be in your field of racers when you give them a good racetrack to race on, because the excitement really gets when they get into lap traffic. You give them a good racetrack where they can catch the lap traffic, and your lap guys can still race without being in a one group deal where they got to run over to get by them. So there's 2 or 3 factors in this. It's quality racers and a quality dance floor for to play on, and an entertainment package, and you'll have it. Does that make sense?
That's good. All right. Ditto on the crack. On the track prep stuff. You got to have a racetrack to run on. I try to get there on the IRA shows, especially places I'm unfamiliar with, or I'm not familiar with the track guy, and he's not used to sprint cars. I try to get there way early to let him know maybe he needs a little more water than normal because the wings and the big tires are going to take the moisture out of it. You know, you try to do that the best you can. I think format has a lot to do with it, too. I love my IRA format. It's so different than most. We do qualify. We actually came up with this format when we were having huge car counts. But it still makes everybody a race. We'll take the heat winners. Let's say we were having four heats. We'll take the four heat winners and the fastest six qualifiers that transferred through their heat. And even on a small car count night where we only have three heats, I'll still only take five cars. You got to finish in the top five. Even if everybody's making a feature, you got to finish in the top five to be in what I call a transfer car. So I got a great race to win that heat, because you may have qualified bad, but if you can win that heat and that redraw goes your way, you start on the pole of the feature. In the same token, I got a great race for fifth. If you're fast qualified, you're starting sixth, you got to pass somebody to get in that top five. You're not automatically going to get a transfer. So let's say my fast qualifier doesn't transfer through his heat, or he finishes sixth. He's the best he can start in the feature is 11th. So we got passing in our races. Our heat races are great. The guys, they like the format. They still like to qualify. I mean, look. But I work with the promoter. If we're somewhere, for example, we raced the Masters at Cedar Lake. It's a big late model show, and we were actually the undercard. They told me we couldn't qualify. We did the passing point system, the same one ASCS uses or the Chili Bowl. And the cream will rise to the top in that deal eventually. But the format can be made to keep the fans' interest as well. Absolutely.
Alan?
Well, in Pennsylvania, we don't have time for outdoor qualifying. We never did, and fans really don't like it. So a lot of times they'll get up and leave when the Outlaws come or something for qualifying. They don't even watch time trials. So everything's lined up according to points, and the fast guys have to start in the middle of the feature. So if the track conditions are right, they can come to the front. But they were saying over there, the rookie's equipment is pretty much even nowadays. And like I said, we had 25 different winners. So certain nights, somebody who's starting in the first or second row, like a young kid maybe doesn't have a lot of points, can get a win. But in the end, it's great, I think, because it gives that person the incentive, like, hey, I can win here. So they started maybe on the first row, or the second row, or the third row. Now they got more points, they're going to be farther back. It's just going to give them that incentive to maybe I can do this again, you know, spend more money, put money in the car, get sponsors, and keep that going. Because if they don't ever get a win at all, or it just makes it tough, you kind of get frustrated and you just might not, you know, you just might not stay in the sport. But if they can get that win, one this year, maybe two next year, it keeps them going, and it gives the fast guys in the back, the older drivers and stuff, gives them the urge to want to get up there and get to the front and pass those, you know, younger people up there, you know, just to get to the front and win again.
Well, Larry, I think that you don't hear the complaints in our area of Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio. You don't hear the complaints about the competition or about the shows. The complaints are about the ticket prices and every little thing that they want to have at five extra laps. They're either going to collect more money through the back gate and really, you know, hand it to the, you know, to the owners to pay more, or they'll up the front gate. The other thing that we seem to have a problem with is an established track. Say the track has run 10 or 15 years on a Sunday night. New owners come along and they want to change it to a Friday night. They want to change the lead, you know, attraction, the lead division, and they think that it will work their way. Well, we just had a track change, you know, close that most people have probably read about. It just happened last week or so. Tri-City Speedway, that's about an hour south of Erie. And it just didn't work the way they thought it would. They had something going, it probably just needed tweaked or a few new ideas, but to come out with a whole new night of racing on top of other competition, and to get the people to pay most of the freight, it's just on the message boards, it seems like most of the complaints are the ticket prices and the pit pass prices. It's not the competition. You know, if they see a good show, they see a different winner or something like that, that's good. It doesn't seem like anyone's really dominating in our area as far as running away with anything, a track championship or anything so far. But it does seem that people will tolerate that, or whatever they see, that's what they get. But they just are tired of, you know, being gouged for the extra ticket price. Same thing at East Bay, I would say that. The prices were raised maybe 10 years ago now, and so we thought whenever new owners came in, it was gonna lower. And there was talk of that, but it never happened. The prices stayed the same.
All right, we're going to just kind of look out at the audience, engage them a little bit. They're kind of sitting here taking this all in. Let's ask them, just show of hands, we're not going to make anybody say anything. You as race fans, do you feel that you're getting the value of the ticket price in the competition that you're seeing on a general basis? Show of hands. Pretty good. Real good. Okay, we'll go away from the panel just a little bit. We talked about the level of competition. Steve brought up about the passing points. I thought it was phenomenal at Oskaloosa to see USAC do away with one lap qualifying and do that passing point system. Something I'm going to try to get done at the Four Crown. I'm getting resistance from USAC, but we're looking at that at Eldora. But nobody's touched on the double file restart that the World of Outlaws started this year. The fans in our area love it. Pro or con? For sprint cars.
The fans would love it, the drivers hate it, and in turn the track operators hate it because you lose weekly cars. I mean, these guys don't have a couple cars that they can, you know, most of your crashes are going to happen in turn one on the start here at Knoxville and most places. And, you know, we can't afford to lose cars, you know, that way. So I don't think on a weekly basis that it's going to be a thing. As a fan, I love it. As track operators and drivers as well, most of them I talk to, it's not a positive for them all the time.
So you're saying you feel double file, restarts, crashes?
Crashes.
Okay.
From a fan's point of view, I like it. If I'm at another racetrack watching it, I like it. But for our weekly racing, not yet. I do like, and what we do also, like the Outlaws do, we do take the lap cars out. Over the tail for restarts, that's kind of worked out pretty good.
Do you feel that intimidates or takes away from the low buck racer? Now he's one lap down, he's going to be two laps, three laps on every caution?
We don't score them that way. If they go to the back and they pass cars that they're on the same lap with, they don't lose their lap like the Outlaw system. So they can pass up there. So I saw Billy Alley one year with the Outlaws, he got lapped early. He passed up to eighth, but he's credited with 16th because he was not scored on the lead lap. So it's scored different places, different ways in different places.
You know, we don't do double file restarts. I agree with these guys. It's a little more exciting at times, but we can't afford to be tearing up equipment like that. And the other thing is, being a racer, if you've earned a spot, you deserve to keep the spot. And if it just happens that the zigzag puts you on the inside, the outside's a fast lane, you just give up a spot that you've already earned, or vice versa. So it's got its merits, its pros and cons, and you know, it's good and bad in both. So, you know, it's good for the entertainment, but sometimes it's bad for the attrition.
Same thing. I like to watch it, but it's not gonna happen with our guys because I can't afford to lose cars and they can't afford to fix them. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I'm agree with him. I like to watch it too, but we don't do it in Pennsylvania. Just when the World Outlaws come, they do it.
Is that at the choice of the promoters or the drivers dictating to the promoters?
Plus, the series does it when they, I mean, when we don't do it at
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
I don't know what the discussion has ever been. I don't know if it's ever been brought up.
Gene?
Well, my son races at Lynch Jr., and he says, Mom, he said, it used to be there was the most dangerous time of a race was on the original start. He said, it's not like that anymore. It's every time there's a double foul restart.
Well said. All right, if you just joined us, we're here at the State of the Union of Sprint Car Racing. We've talked about car counts. I think pretty much everybody feels it's in the A to low B range. The driver demographics probably need some work on. The competition, by your consensus and their report, it's favorable. Let's look at the crowd now. A lot of factors affecting the crowd, weather, prices, economy, and everything else. The crowd. Up, down, stagnant, old, young, new, anybody?
Well, I'll go. Okay. Our crowds are up this year. And what was it, 2004 when our last big disaster happened out of D.C.? Anytime the economy's bad, your local crowd should go up because people aren't spending the money to go out of town for the weekends and the bigger vacations. They got the new catchphrase of staycations. Our crowds have been up this year. Our Dirt Cup, our big race, it was actually up this year real well, but it was our 40th anniversary and a lot of hype went into that. But the crowds are up a little bit. We've kept our ticket prices down. We haven't raised ticket prices in 9 years. We've actually decreased them now. We've got it to where the adults stay the same, but if you bring kids from like 6 and under is free. If they're 7 to 15 with an adult, they're $3. Because that kid's still going to eat food. I'm a believer that when you come to a racetrack, you bring this much money with you. And if you spend 3/4 of that money getting in, you don't have enough money left to buy popcorn and candy bars and pop or a beer or t-shirt, so you don't get the full experience of being at the racetrack. So if you leave a little money in their pocket when they get in, now they can go eat food, buy a beer, get a t-shirt, take a souvenir home, go to the carnival, go to the fair. If you spend all your money getting to the fair, you can't ride the rides, what fun did you have? So you got to make sure you keep your prices down, keep it affordable. We try to work more off volume because they're still going to, we have all the concessions and souvenirs and stuff like that. We want to talk about crowd demographics. I have some strange analogies. You probably figured that out already, but the one I use a lot is I refer to my racetrack as an orchard. You got trees that bear fruit.
You got fruit. We were allowed to use that one.
He's
in Washington, so
you
can.
Yeah, we got trees. Look at your racetrack like an orchard. You got all these trees, they're bearing fruit, you're doing good, you got a nice harvest year after year after year, you get complacent with it. Pretty soon them trees get old. They quit producing fruit. If you don't plant new trees every year, you're gonna run out of an orchard someday, and it takes 2 or 3 or 4 years before that tree is gonna produce. It's the same with a race fan. If you don't get your young race fans and get them coming a little bit more to where they get used to, that's what they do on the weekends, you're going to wake up one day and all your older people have retired, gone away, and you don't have anybody filling your grandstands anymore. It's, you know, the older people, and when I say older, I mean 30 and above, they're coming whether they want to or not. What I'm saying is they're already in a habit of being there. They're going to be there. You don't have to work on them as much. You got to work on the 25 and under crowd because they're the ones that don't know if they want to go boating or biking or sailing or whatever they do, boogie board nowadays. You got to get them coming to your racetrack at an early age where that becomes the habit to carry on the tradition year after year. So our crowds are up. We have a lot of very young kids. We do a lot of the social media stuff. We keep the prices really affordable for them, and we make it fun for them. It's kind of the place to come hang out. I don't even care if they watch the races. Just come inside my gates, hang out with your friends, BS, chase the girls, whatever those guys do nowadays, and have fun. It's the experience they're there to pay for. They go home, they come back the next week.
Hey, Larry, can I ask one quick question? Those old trees, can you then use them for a dance floor?
Good, buddy. Anyone else on your crowd?
Well, I'll just speak from a traveling, a regional deal. I think some of it's got to be put on a series to schedule accordingly. I've turned down dates because I didn't think we're going to work, because I want to go back to that track every year. And so maybe instead of this track in this area having two races, maybe they should just have one, everybody to come that one time and, you know, have a home run and race back the next time. I've turned down probably 3 or 4 races this year. I mean, part of it's on us. We got to do it right. But our crowds, you know, because of that, 90% of my schedule is repeat. And that's the way I like it. It's a lot less work in the wintertime.
Okay, this crowd, younger, older.
Mid-range to older, to be honest with you.
They are. Fruit trees are sagging.
I think the young kids, I got 2 young kids. I got a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old. At the dinner table, I just see the top of their heads. And, you know, otherwise, they get it at least once in a while. But their attention span, because of all these video games and everything, they're not going to sit around for a red flag fuel stop. And they're just not doing it. It's just, you got to bing, bing, bing. 3 hours and get them out of there. That's all they're staying for.
I can speak for Lernerville on the regular shows. They've had a tough time only because of the weather. They had 8 rainouts to this point. So it's hard to keep continuity, keep people coming and in the habit of coming when you have that many rainouts. But their specials were up. And, you know, I think concession-wise and everything, they sold more at this most recent Silver Cup race than ever before. However, you know, I have mixed emotions about the format of the race. I still hear a lot of confusion in the crowd about, they took what used to be the Silver Cup race, which was the Don Martin Memorial, the fellow who built the track. They put it, broke it into, this will be the third year that they did it, two 30 lap segments instead of, it used to be a 35 or a 40 lap race straight through. And even though the World of Outlaws publicity says it's popular with the fans and it's popular with the drivers, the fans are confused. They're trying to come up with an overall winner. So they thought they had the answer to this, that meaning the World of Outlaws, because last year Donnie Schatz won the overall he finished the highest in both segments of the 30 lap. And he even came on stage and said, well, thanks very much, this is a nice trophy, but I don't feel like I won anything. Because he didn't win anything. He was the overall high point man, you might say. So they changed it this year. You had to win a feature, so you had to win a 30 lapper, or you couldn't possibly be the champion. Well, Dale Blaney won the first 30 lapper, and then he was out early in the second 30 lapper. So people knew that he couldn't possibly be the overall champion because somebody would have a higher finish in that first 30 lapper and go ahead and win the second one. So whoever won the second one was going to win the overall. I just think it's kind of confusing. So do the fans.
Amen.
Thank you.
We haven't raised our ticket prices in our 6 years that we've been there. They've been the same for our weekly racing. We struggle with the 11 to 15 year old crowd because closest towns to us are within 15, 20 miles. So that age group doesn't want to go with their parents anywhere. We do okay with the 10 and under. They get in free because they have to come with their parents. So we're trying to figure out some things. We struggle, like I say, with the 11 to 15 year old crowd.
Are you fertilizing those young kids, though, so that they can come up when they're 11 or 15?
Yeah.
I mean, what does it take to keep the kids enthused? The one kid I won't embarrass him that came with it, you hit it on the head last night. He says, man, there were more hot chicks here tonight than there were last night. So.
This weekend, it's called Ladies Night Out. First 5,000 ladies in free, you know. So all the women know they can get the racetrack for free, but every guy out there is going, there's going to be 5,000 girls at the racetrack. Yes, we're And we gross better dollars on that show by letting all the women in free. We do most of our regular weekly shows. It's just a entertainment gimmick that you use. And
well, go back to the age, too. You know, I look, a lot of our teams are struggling to have crew guys. I remember when I was growing up, I was glad to be a tire changer, gear guy, whatever it was. You know, I see a lot of our teams on the road. It's just a driver and his, you know, maybe one friend, and there's just not young kids taking the interest to even work on them.
Does anybody have the answer?
Let them in the pits when they're 14. Get them hooked before they get their driver's license to figure out something else to do on their Saturday nights. Get them in the pits working with their dads, their neighbors, their friends. If they'll sign and say they're 14, sign the waiver, get them in the pits and get them working on the race car at a young age and create the habit early.
Do you do insurance at Skagit?
14's fine. No. As a matter of fact, any age is fine as long as your parents sign. It's up to the track to set the deal.
We set it at 14.
But I mean, nowadays, I'll be honest with you, we'll go down to 14 in a Hornet class. It's automatic across the board. Even 12 at some places. 12-year-old in a four-cylinder car, go race. Eight in a micro sprint. I mean, the insurance companies are working. You know, we don't like it, but we're forced to do it because the competition's doing it. We're forced to go down on the age and let you in. It's the track sets the rules. We'll work with whatever track wants to do.
Yes, you hit on something earlier, but they said they didn't know the drivers. I think driver introductions are minimized too much now. I liked it years ago when the cars would park out there, the driver gets out, you see the driver, the kids can't relate to the driver. They don't even want to see them sometimes.
Do you feel as a fan or
the older fans don't like that.
But do you feel as a fan that some of the announcers now are talking over the fans? In other words, they're assuming that the fans know everything, that everybody in the house knows what's going on. And it's just, and as the thing I abhor is the announcers that sit here and say, now on the track is the XYZ, so 4, 5, 27, 9, 3, 8, 47 sponsors, number 27, B, Bill McGillicuddy. I mean, you don't know who the driver is until you hear all this other crap, and by then, the noise is so loud you don't hear.
You line up before the cars come on the track, because you don't compete, you can't compete with the cars a lot of the time, then you don't even know who's in the race half the time.
One thing that we've incorporated at Eldora, and we stole from Sharon Speedway, I mean, we love to steal, that's the best thing, but is, you know, so many times you can go down in the pits after the race. That's nice, but the drivers are all fighting, they hate each other, they want to punch somebody, everything else. We do the pre-race thing for an hour now. We let the fans get down there, the drivers are relaxed. And now the kids, you know, that driver who maybe was a nobody, put that little kid in his car. So who is that little kid going to cheer for all night? He knows somebody.
That's exactly right. We do autograph sessions up at our pit gate before. We get four or five guys every night. If they walk in and they see this driver, and that driver's like, I know that guy, I just met him, that's my car tonight. You've got to get interaction with the kids. These race car drivers are 10 feet tall, these kids. It was that way when I was little, and it ain't changed now. You meet them, you get to know them, you got something to relate to. Good point.
We got a ton of questions here, but let's just stop. I mean, obviously you've been hearing a lot of stuff. Does anybody have any questions right now maybe we haven't touched on?
I have a question for Steve. The two feeder tracks that you have, do you financially support them through sponsorships?
No, the quarter midget track is part of my organization. Oh, okay. And that's right. I mean, it's literally 50 feet off the turn three and four, or maybe 150 feet off turn three and four. The other one is owned by a whole other group, but his kids have raced. It's the Lemley family that used to run Skagit, also on Deming Speedway, a complete separate entity, but we work together. You know, we're definitely, he works, helps at our track, we help at his track, we share officials. So, I mean, we're basically like next door neighbors.
And as far as using social media, have any of you ever watched the Barrett Jackson auction? And they have a deal there where it's a feature card, or be like one every 20 minutes, and people can go in on the internet and say what they expected selling price for that car is, and then it runs on a daily basis, and there's a daily prize. Is there a way that with the kids with all their electronic equipment could go in and during the races, each one, pick their winner for a heat race and tally that up so that there was continuing interest where they can use their computer or their hand, their smartphone or whatever?
Jonathan? Yeah, he's our full-time web guy at Eldora, does a fantastic job. Does all the social and everything. We're looking at doing, I'm sorry, and Scott's here for the Fast Series and does Attic and Fremont and stuff. But the question is, can you engage the kids like with the polls and stuff like that? Your Twitter and Twitter and all this kind of stuff? Or?
Both Facebook, Twitter, it's instant results. You could, with the right software, and it would take 5 minutes to set up, you could pose a question or a survey. And, well, I think we're going to start that this Saturday, right? And you can get instant results.
We do that. You know, my social media guy is just fantastic. Unfortunately, he decided after 4 years it wasn't a big enough challenge. He should move on. But he'll be in the middle of a main event on a red or a yellow. Who's going to win? And just that lights up. I mean, he just does stuff like that. But we have a kid up there right now that's constantly tweeting throughout the night on different stuff like that. We've even done stuff, bring your iPhone or wherever they are, the concession stand, a souvenir. We'll just for the fun of it, see how many. We get several people to bring them up for discounts at a souvenir, come up for a free Coca-Cola. And it's amazing how many people in the grandstands are constantly checking that phone. The young generation, it engages them in what you're doing. And the ones that aren't there, they still get it. It's like, crap, if I was at the racetrack, I'd get a free soda pop.
All right,
we
got a question. Okay, sir.
Well, it's not a question. I wanted to agree with you about the format last night. I like the fact, from what I understand, it was a random drawing. Then they ran the same each reverse.
No, they maybe Steve can tell me if I'm wrong. They drew for position. They lined up a round of heats. They earned points based upon the finish and the number of cars they passed or lost. And then the heat races were lined up. Those points became their qualifying time. They then inverted their standard format of a six invert based on points.
They ran the ASCS system. USAC ran an ASCS show last night.
I thought it was good. I thought it was fair and like you didn't waste time watching time trials.
Except that you didn't know who the driver. Format. That was a chili bowl last night.
Yeah, it was excellent. Yes, sir.
The drivers bring candy for their kids. They all shake their hands and pick.
I think that's great.
And he can't wait to come back with his mom, who wants to see the drivers. And it's been a great thing for us.
Before we move on, any other comments or questions? Go ahead.
The feeder tracks, are those paying, the people that come and watch those races, they pay, or are they just basically the pay?
The question is on the feeder tracks that Steve was talking about, like the mini sprint track and the quarter midget track. Is that a spectator paying track, or do the fans get in free?
In our quarter midget track, the fans get to go to that free. And the kids that race, they pay a little fee each night just enough to cover the expenses. Up at Deming, it's run just like any other racetrack. You got pit passes, front gate. It's just like any sprint car track in the country, except it's smaller. They run mini sprints instead of full-size sprints. So, yeah, it's a full paid deal.
To go along with that, at Eldora, we just built Little Eldora, and it's a combination. It's a one-seventh mile go-kart track with a 1/12 mile quarter midget track in the infield. And about the paying, non-paying, we charged $5 to watch the go-karts, $10 pit pass, had 372 go-karts, and like 800 people in the pits, had less than 100 people in the grandstands because it was $5. We ran quarter midgets a couple of weeks ago, or so it was during the King's Royal, it was free, and we had like 800 people in the grandstands watching it. So are we defeating our purpose by getting that stinking little $5 and losing potential fans? But what that little go-kart and quarter midget track is doing, just what Steve said, it's in the shadow of Eldora Speedway. So they're saying in their mind they're racing at Eldora, but we're hoping to move them up. Yes, sir.
I think, I know it's a huge challenge to balance everything that we're talking about here, but my only fear, being a longtime race fan, is that we lose track of what I like to see. And I love the show. I love the world. Go to all the World of Outlaws races, come from Pennsylvania here, but I still like to see a race. So a show's great, you know, an event is great, and you're going to get some of that demographic, and you want some of those 18, 19-year-old kids to come out. I have several of them myself. They used to come all the time, and they'll come again because they're part of the racing family. But they're not here this week because they had some other things going on, and that's going to be like that. They'll keep coming back. Just got to remember that through those 14 or 8-year-old years, up through their 19-year-old years, I was the one handing out the greenbacks to get them in, to buy them the T-shirts for everything that they're doing. So you can't lose track of the fact that you still want to come and not see somebody start on the front row and drive away high. You still want to see a race. I don't mind looking at pretty girls. I'm not too old for that. That's a great thing. But at the same time, I think we just got to be careful to make sure. I think Alan probably should be given so much credit. He was one of the first ones to really tie technology to what's going on out there, and I think that's awesome. And I was actually skeptical at first. I'm still not really, you know, technologically savvy, but I watched it grow in central Pennsylvania. I hear the scuttlebutt, and you know, people say, how'd that guy know about that? Oh, he got that off Hosehead. And it's developed another branch of race fan. I think it's awesome. I think it's great. For me personally, I like to come and see a really good race, see somebody pass somebody, and let their skill bring them to the front. So I still think when we started off the conversation about track prep and some of those things, bag for your buck, that's still what the basic is about. And I think that us, the racing families, will continue to bring people. And those kids that aren't here this week, they're from racing families. They'll be back.
Just a quick question for you as an audience here. A lot of you were here last year. You've been to some of the other panels. You've seen the Hall of Fame and everything. You know the theater room upstairs. Would you rather see these panels in the theater room versus here? Do you have any input on that? They were just asking that. Okay, great. They never give us enough time. We're moving along here. We're going to do a double question here, and then we'll open it back up to questions, and we'll try to wrap it up because there's something going on next door tonight that I guess everybody wants to go to. I guess there's a lot of pretty hot chicks over there tonight that we get to use little smartphones. But panel, State of the Union Sprint Car Racing. What direction do you see sprint car racing going at a local level, and what is your current grade cars letter grade for sprint car racing as a whole, whether it be 360, 410. Just, this is the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, so it includes all types of sprint cars. You're the lucky one.
I give it, around here, I give it a B plus, A minus, you know, it could be a little better. I think our competition is great here at Knoxville, and some of us here know we're spoiled by what we have. One thing about our drivers is not very many of them are local. I mean, the whole state has 3 million people in it. In Pennsylvania, Harrisburg has, you know, Harrisburg area has 3 million people. So, you know, we're drawn from a large area. So what we have to do is attract the locals. And I think we're doing okay. We need to do a better job of promotion. I'm getting some ideas right here as we go. And as I travel around the country, I see some things that could be done. And obviously Knoxville, everybody knows Cap's retiring. And we're gonna have somebody coming in and with some new ideas, some new energy. And I'm excited about that. I mean, I love Cap to death, but I'm excited about, you know, someone coming in with some different ideas as well, so we can keep this thing going here at Knoxville.
I say in our area, I'd give our area a B because there's always room for improvement. I think things are going pretty good. Like I said, all things you talked about, our attendance is good, car counts are good. We just need to, you know, keep building on that and come up with, you know, some more things to keep it going. I'd say traveling around, a little bit concerned about the sanction bodies, some of the things they're doing that ultimately affects our local racing. Just hope that they consider all our ideas and stuff before they make a lot of decisions coming up, to consider what we go through every week before they make the decision that affects all of us.
I think the state of the union for sprint car racing right now, I'd have to say it's stable. You know, I've been in the game now for 10 years, and we came in and things were flowing pretty good. You just sort of jump on the train and it's moving, it's doing all right. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, this economic disaster we're suffering through right now hit us, and I think it caught a lot of us maybe by surprise, or we didn't exactly know which direction to go, and it rocked our worlds pretty hard. And we all took a big step backwards. But I think now that I've talked to a lot of promoters that are really, really getting down and focusing on the detail of what they're doing with their racetrack, from the fans, the facilities, to the cars, to the rules, to the scheduling, everything. And I think you're gonna see sprint car racing is gonna do real well the next few years, because the promoters that have been in the game for a while have seen good, they've seen the bad of the decline a couple years ago. Now we're all working real hard to get it back up to good. And once we get to that point, it's just gonna continue on past that. So, you know, we're okay, we're stable. We've all had some pretty good learning years the last couple years. And, you know, I'm excited the next few years. A lot of promoters are ready to grab the thing by this bull by the horns and make it good again. So sprint car racing is going to be really good. It's still a great form of entertainment, and we're gonna take care of you guys and have a great place for you to come visit.
Steve, I think sprint car racing is probably bigger than ever. It's just segmented. I will take my neck of the woods here. When I started the IRA thing, we were the only game in town in our whole state. We were it. You want to watch sprint car race? Go to IRA race. Now you got some tracks running 360 stuff, or one mount runs 410 stuff. So there was a night this year we had 3 sprint car races within the 2-hour races. So we're just getting broken up. So we're fighting ourselves. I'd like to see it just be a sprint car, and maybe not everybody was meant to have a sprint car. You know, maybe it's, you know, I always want to be the baddest of the bad, and that's what the fans want to see. You know, maybe they're seeing, they're going someplace and they're seeing their first sprint car race, and that car can't do a wheelie because it's not even capable of doing a wheelie. You know, maybe. Maybe they're not seeing a real sprint car race. That's my concern. I like to get us more unified and we're fighting each other. I think there's obviously more sprint cars than there's ever been. We just need to work together.
Well, I agree with Steve in that from the time I started my website back in the 90s, there was only so many organizations around and there was more tracks that ran 410 sprint cars and stuff. But right now, all the different groups, they pop up constantly with 305s and traditional sprints that run with smaller 360 motors and 305 motors, non-wing sprints. There's so many different sprint car organizations anymore that are all over the place, that there's definitely more sprint cars if you consider all of them. If you consider the 305s and the carbureted sprints and the non-wing sprints and the everything, the 360s, the 358s, 410s, there's tons of them, like Steve said, more than ever. But it's just tough to, I guess, there's so many people, so many different organizations out there. It'd be nice if maybe there weren't quite as many, that it would, that you could get more cars to each, like each track or each group to each time, instead of having it so segmented like Steve was saying. But in Pennsylvania, I mean, I'd probably give it an A minus or something, or an A, because it's working fine there yet. It's gonna probably, if 410 racing ever does go away, Pennsylvania's gonna be the last stronghold for it. I mean, it's gonna take a long time to get 410s out of Pennsylvania. I don't think it'll ever happen in my lifetime. But it's because it does well there. It's the tracks draw fans. Even on Saturday nights, some fans will just go to Port Royal, and some fans will just go to Lincoln, and they're diehards for each track. And even at Williams Grove, we don't even have a lot of, you only run wing sprint cars. You know, you don't see like four or five divisions to fill the back gate. You know, they just with the fans and the 30 or 40 cars that show up, they run a show. So they're making it. They're doing fine. And I think the sprint car racing is going to be around for a long time. I don't think we're really going to have to worry about it. Might have to do some fixes here and there somewhere to maybe get it together a little more or whatever. But I think it's going to be around a long time.
And guess what the fans want to hear?
Well, you know, whenever you ask me about you know, that rocky start at Lernerville, we made quite a few of the trade papers with headlines like that ugly word strike, you know, and that really had a lot of fans in doubt. Are they going to have sprints or aren't they? Or are they sure? Are they stable or whatever? Now, the car count has not grown, so I would say that since we survived that scare at the beginning of the season, that maybe I would give our racing in Western Pennsylvania at the tracks that run them on a, what you'd call a regular basis, I would give them a C. It's average. Competition is average. The, you know, the field count, the size of the fields are average and all that. But, you know, we're fortunate enough to have specials like All-Stars or World of Outlaws and things like that, that you know, do perk people's interest. And of course, when that happens at your track, this is like, everybody knows this, that you have to put your best foot forward, and your job as a track owner or promoter is to get those fans back that are only there one time because of that special event. So, but you know, we're really hurting, because to pick up the slack, then we have a few tracks that are running sprints that have never run sprints before, like the familiar name of that everybody knows, the household name, Dog Hollow Speedway. They're their first sprint car race this year. But, you know, someplace like Pittsburgh's Pennsylvania Motor Speedway, which is a big, sweeping half mile, and sprints turn a scary speed on that track, but they're supposed to have maybe three races, but they're so low paying that they don't attract a lot, you know. So I would give everything a C.
The interesting thing about that Dog Hollow track, I kind of just, there's no racing papers left to read hardly anymore, so you have to just kind of pick and choose where you can read things, like on hose heads and slideways and stuff like that. But they came in with only like 16 cars or something like that, but the crowd went berserk because they had never seen a sprint car. Sprint cars are magic. I'm gonna throw something out to you. Just, I tried to pick up some comments from different people, and I heard Steve Sinclair and I think Alan talk about everybody needs to work together a little bit more and stuff like that. NFL, NBA, Big Ten, they all have commissioners, they all have a czar. Does racing need a czar, and would it ever work? Just yes, whoever wants to put it out. Whoever wants to attack it.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I agree with you, because, you know, for years, John Padgett was kind of the kingpin on the West Coast there at Silver Dollar Speedway. When he left Silver Dollar Speedway, his son Alan took over, but there was a whole bunch of other people that they wanted to be the kingpin, and there's a lot of fighting, a lot of, you know, unless somebody, the problem is if we all got together and voted somebody in to be a president of the whole country, that'd be fine. But he's going to say, well, this is what we need to do. And Rex's going to say, yeah, but that's not going to work in my area, and here's why, and I'm almost financially responsible. I can't do that because I'm not going to go bankrupt. And I'm going to say, well, that other idea won't work out in Washington. I can't do that because I don't want to go bankrupt. So it's going to be very hard for that. I think what we need is like what Cappy talked about in his article in Sprint Midget Magazine, back when he said there was 8 or 10 promoters across the country that all knew each other real well, and basically ran the whole country. We really need to get a promoter's board of directors, if nothing else, just like we got started up here, get promoters from around the country that they meet. They're the ones that put all the money up, their butts are on the line, they should be the one calling the shots. They shouldn't have stuff dictated to them. You can't have the tail can't wag the dog. You know, we're the ones, if we go out of business, racing's dead. We shut down my track and his track and the other track, racing dies, it doesn't come back. So I really think that the promoters themselves should get together and be able to come up with more of the rules, regulations, and format on how sprint car racing, the direction needs to go. That's my personal opinion, but that's what I see.
Well, the World of Outlaws were hosting a sprint car summit. We've attended those, and at first I think everybody's pretty much thinking, yeah, we can all do this together, but it's come to the point now where what works for one region doesn't work for another. So we have had to, you know, I think we all are pretty similar on our rules, but
I think the summit worked on getting car specifications closer around, sort of like the UMP late models and that, but it's lack on organization of event structure and everything else. Any other thoughts or comments on the czar or commissioner? Okay. Any questions? Yes, sir.
First, I have a question for Bill W.
Sure.
Did I hear you right, Bill? Were there a couple teams running the 430 engine this year?
Yeah, we had a couple in weekly competition. They're not going to get the horsepower that the 410s are going to get, but top 10 eligible, or top 10, yeah.
And were they significant? Was their budget significantly less for their motor than a 410?
Yes.
And then a question for the board, the group. Do you, before the night starts, do you have a set time that you'd like to see your program over with on a weekly basis? And what is it?
I like it, the early bird. At Knoxville, we can run off three divisions, usually 10:30. We start about 7 o'clock. So we have a 10-minute intermission. Drivers come over, sign autographs. We were talking about that earlier. Up in the stands. Get them back across the track and we keep them rolling. You got to be ready for your race when the white flag is out for the race before yours or you go to the back. So we run them off pretty good. You know, you get red flags and stuff. But I think that's important with, I can't remember who said it, but the short attention span of the younger fan. You know, more than 3 hours, you know, NFL, everybody worships that. There's about 7 minutes of actual gameplay in that 3 hours, really. And of action, but you're holding their attention for 3 hours. That's about the limit for people.
Sometimes we don't have control of that. If you own the track, these guys are doing. Yeah. They're booking our show.
Yeah,
I try to discourage more than two other divisions, but sometimes to get the show, he can do what he wants. And the earlier you start, then the track gets bad. It just makes for a longer, drawn-out night, and we got more spins and whatever. But we don't always have control of that as much as we might think.
From the time you start racing, the 3 hours, like you say, is probably the max. We try. Very important. You got to start on time. You can always slow down a little bit. You can't make up. Different things happen with crashes or what have you. But you can put it at a 3 hour or less. I think that can be done. It should be done.
Same with us. We start at 7 o'clock. I mean, I'm a real stickler to detail. I want my national anthem played between 5 to 7 and 7 o'clock because that's starting time. And we shoot for trying to be done. We don't really ever get done before 9:30, but I try to be done between 9:30 and 10. Lately, it's been about 10:15 just because some guys, they crash a little bit. But the problem is people have attention spans. But the other thing you got to understand, if you're trying to bring young kids, get them hooked, the worst thing that can happen to a promoter is a parent leaving the kid going, if you're going to act like that, we're not coming back. The kid's just tired. His butt hurts from sitting in the grandstands for 3.5-4 hours. He's cranky. It's not his fault. It's the racetrack's fault because he didn't get your program in on time. So that's no dog and pony shows. I don't know how many tracks go through and figure out. My track's about $950 to $1,100 per hour for event labor. So I'm not going to mess around for 15 minutes to try to sell hot dogs and cost me an extra $400 in labor. I'm gonna run the show through. You always have your little breaks anyhow. You get the show done, get it over. The racers appreciate it because they're loaded up home before tomorrow. The fans are back home before the 11 o'clock news. Everybody's happy. They're not wore out. Too much anything is not good. They won't come back if you wear them out with too long of a show.
We just saw that 2 weeks ago. We ran a nine-winged and a 360, an NRA Sprint Invaders. I hate to call them 360s. NRA Sprint Invaders show. And we got done, I get 9:30 or 9:45.
That's happy people.
Half of the crowd went into the pits. We were still trying to chase drivers out at 1 o'clock in the morning because fans were just down there frolicking and talking.
That's
they were
the
cooking
part.
On their, they were tailgating. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Good.
Unbelievable.
The best thing that could happen is for a fan at each racetrack to find out what weather channel the track operator looks at and have a fake storm from whichever direction their weather comes from. That speeds it up. Really
I've done
fast.
That lots. I've got guys, we got rain about 10 miles south. Get on the track.
We've all done that.
That works a couple times when they get on to after that. They cry wolf to get you.
But we need help from the fans too. I mean, the preacher, when you go to church on Sunday, what does that preacher always look at? The attendance board. Last week we had 277 people in church. Come on out, let's help. You get your friends. You come to church and see that 274 go up to 375. I mean, you guys love this sport, obviously. I mean, you're here. Look at the people that come from all over the country here this weekend. Kings Row this year, we're up 15.5%. We're very, very pleased with that. But we need everybody to help us and bring new people. And the promoters, we're hard to talk to on race day. I mean, you know, talk to me on race day and you'll get your head bit off, right, Gene? But talk to us because we got to know where we're wrong and what we're doing wrong. And don't get on the message board but help us and we'll help you. Okay. Any other closing questions or thoughts?
Larry,
either the panel or
Queen's contest last night, one of the questions for one of the queens was, you know, how would you get new people to the racetrack, mostly the younger generation or friends who have never been to a race? How would you encourage them to come? And her answer was, just make them come, just bring them. And once they're exposed to that, so if everybody would set that as a goal to bring one person, you know, that would help us all.
Earl Balfes used to say, when that green flag drops on the start of the feature, if the hair in the back of your neck doesn't stand up, there ain't nothing going to do it. I mean, sprint car racing without a doubt. Wing, non-wing, I feel bad for asphalt sprint car racing. I think it's really, really suffering. But Winchester, asphalt sprint car racing is as close to dirt as you're going to get. That's exciting. But anything else, folks? Panel?
Thanks for coming out, guys.
How about a nice round of applause for all these queens? I'm sure everybody will stick around, and if you have some questions, feel free. Sometimes you're kind of intimidated. Yes.
I think if you do, like Steve said, and like Phil Greens, if you run a good show off, I'll bring my friends.
There you go.
Bring your dance partner. It's going to be fun.
I mean, you go up there, you can dance on his floor, you can get the trees, apples falling.
Like I used to from Paragon at 2 o'clock in the morning. I ain't bringing my friends.
Steve, you got loyal people. There's a fellow right there with an IRA.
He goes to
that. He uses a cane and he stood there the whole time.
Let me tell you a story. I just met him two years maybe now. He lives in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is, there's not a sprint car track anywhere near there. He's at every IRA race, no matter where we're at. So I applaud him. That's a big fan. Seen some good ones and some bad ones, but remember the good ones.
If it wasn't for the bad ones, you wouldn't appreciate the good ones today.
Well, shameless plug for the museum. Tell your friends about this facility. It's bar none for short track racing. It's the best. And Bob Baker and crew are doing a tremendous job expanding this new Salute to the Champions concept. Going to go with three more champions to be announced. And it's open 363 days a year. And more panels here tomorrow, Thursday. Bill Wright's got one tomorrow. enjoy your weekend in Iowa and visit a racetrack. And what we always say is, if you can't get to Eldora, just get to a racetrack and keep supporting your sport. Thank you.